Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I would say that the greatest danger is overreacting. There is no evidence that they have it. We ought to really sit back and think and not jump the gun and believe that we are going to be attacked. That's how we got into that useless war in Iraq and lost so much. With
all due respect.
All right. Well, we jumped the gun a little bit there on Ron and Michelle. We'll get to that exchange from last night's debate in just a second. But how important was this final Iowa debate? From a horse race standpoint, well, a Rasmussen poll taken just before the debate found Gingrich's support in Iowa had actually dropped over the last week after Romney and Ron Paul especially attacked him heavily, Bachman too. Gingrich and Paul were now shown as tied at 21% or 22%. Ron Paul tied for first, with Romney third at 16, Bachman fourth at 11. It's a freecountry.org political reporter, Anna Sale. And the takeaways, Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick are here. Hi, Anna. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Good morning.
By way of background, Todd, before we get to the debate, what do you think was landing with voters to slow the Gingrich surge in Iowa?
Well, the one part of this debate that Newt Gingrich had a hard time with was his relationship to Fannie and Freddie. Are voters across Iowa worried about that over the last few days as he slid 6 or 7 points? I don't think that we're really sure. Look, if you look at the dynamic of this race from the beginning, the kind of, you know, whack-a-mole gophers pop up, you know, Romney's the front runner, other candidates pop up, surpass him, they drop back down. There are a lot of reasons why Newt may be different from that, but the dynamic still holds. Somebody goes out in front of Romney, a lot of press coverage, some attacks by opponents, OPPO, which in the political world is opposition research, opposition press efforts by campaigns, and that can add some gravity to your campaign. So you may be seeing that effect with Newt Gingrich, and I think he was hoping, because he is such a talented special debater, that last night would have been a chance for him to regain some footing. He had some really good points, some weak points at the beginning, and so, you know, we'll have to wait a little while and wait till the caucuses to see how it actually pans out for him.
Absolutely, and we'll get to those debate clips, including some of the major Gingrich moments. Gingrich on the defensive, really, which we hadn't seen in previous debates very much. Anna, before we get to it, anything else that you want to say about why prior to this debate, Ron Paul was surging and Gingrich was stalling?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that this week is when we really saw the attacks on Gingrich's demeanor and decision-making and character really come out. Mitt Romney calling him zany. And also in the debate, even in Iowa, the debate on Saturday night, talking about the Palestinian issue and the invented people, and Romney saying, I will approach issues with care, caution, and sobriety, which is a clear contrast with Gingrich. So I think you might see some of these issues land. It's getting serious now. The caucus is very close, so people might be looking for the serious candidate, and maybe Gingrich just doesn't seem to be that.
And Gingrich, as we will hear in this very compressed montage of three of the candidates, was obviously sensitive to Mitt Romney being out there calling him zany. See if you recognize these three voices.
I'm a serious candidate for President of the United States, and my facts are accurate.
I'm very concerned about not appearing to be zany.
I hope I am the Tim Tebow of the Iowa caucuses.
All right, so you know who they were, and we'll hear some longer clips now. And in that context, my guess after watching last night is that Ron Paul will probably come out the biggest loser, Romney the biggest winner, and that Gingrich held his own. And here's why. The Fox News Channel moderators set up a foreign policy question that let both the moderators and other candidates really go after Ron Paul on his libertarian views about Iran. So we're going to hear a three-part clip here. These have internal edits, but they certainly are going to give you the genuine gist. It's Ron Paul, Michelle Bachman, Ron Paul.
I would say that the greatest danger is overreacting. There is no evidence that they have it. We ought to really sit back and think and not jump the gun and believe that we are going to be attacked. That's how we got into that useless war in Iraq and lost so much.
With all due respect to Ron Paul, I think I have never heard a more dangerous answer for American security than the one that we just heard from Ron Paul. And I'll tell you the reason why. And the reason why I would say that is because we know without a shadow of a doubt that Iran will take a nuclear weapon. They will use it to wipe our ally Israel off the face of the map, and they've stated they will use it against the United States of America.
What is the whole world about the drone being in Iran? And we're begging and pleading, and how are we going to start a war to get this drone back? Why were we flying a drone over Iran? Why do we have to bomb so many countries? Why are we in, have 900 bases, 130 countries, and we're totally bankrupt? How are you going to rebuild the military when we have no money? How are we going to take care of the people?
Ron Paul and Michelle Bachmann from the Iowa debate last night on the Fox News Channel. By the way, listeners, you did not just get a text message. That sound you heard was the sound they were using to signal to candidates that their answer time was up. So, Anna, Americans in general are really suspicious of and afraid of Iran. The nuclear weapon question and whether they have it, of course, was the initial thrust there. Conservative Republicans more so than others. And I think that exchange, even though Ron Paul got a lot of cheers at the end, it takes him out of his no-holds-barred conservative image on big government as the dominant or only sole thing about him that most people realize, and reminds Republican voters that, you know, he's like Dennis Kucinich on foreign policy. So my question is, how much does it matter in a year when people are almost singly focused on the economy?
I think it matters. I think you heard Ron Paul in that exchange. It's the clearest I've heard him articulate his position on foreign policy, which is we don't have the money. We've got to think about this. And he was strong against the Iraq war and then went on to compare it to Iran. And I think that's we've had so much talk about federal spending in this Republican contest so far, and how the different candidates have sliced that has been interesting. Newt Gingrich has repeated his line again and again that he's a hawk, but he's a cheap hawk. But so everyone's had to figure out their way of threading that needle. Ron Paul doesn't try to thread the needle at all. He throws it out. And I think for just your regular run-of-the-mill Republican who doesn't just fully embrace that libertarian philosophy, that might be too much.
Todd, you have an impression of this? You know, my sense was this was the night that people in Iowa really started paying attention. Obviously, Iowans know that they're the first caucus state, so they're probably more invested as a group in this than other people around the country at this point on the calendar. But this was the last night of a debate. It was in prime time. It was on Fox. People were really engaged. And I don't know. If Ron Paul is tied for first, I have a feeling with genuine conservatives he took a hit last night.
I think he probably did, too, because Anna's right. Ron Paul's foreign policy position is the thing that sets him apart in a negative way from mainstream Republicanism. You know, Ron Paul has that galvanized, very loyal, hooting and hollering, hold the signs support. He has it because people like his unorthodox positions on the Fed, on TARP, on big government, on regulation, where he goes farther even than most of his conservative colleagues. But what you heard last night was the part that sets Ron Paul apart from Republicans in a bad way. Isolationism has not been on the Republican platform for 70 years. Ron Paul, I'm going to take issue with you, Brian. He's not a Dennis Kucinich anti-war candidate. Dennis Kucinich is a peacenik. Ron Paul's an isolationist. He does not believe that the United States should be intervening around the world at all, except in the most extreme circumstances. The rest of the candidates are reflecting a Republicanism now much more in line with an activist, nation-building foreign policy. Some people call it neoconservatism. You saw it in spades in the last Bush administration, of course. We don't even have to describe what that means. And all of those advisors, many of them from the Bush administration, they're not in hiding, Brian. They are the national security advisors to the Perry, Gingrich, Romney campaign.
Yep.
Even one was in the Herman Cain campaign. So all of those candidates are very much in line with continuing an activist, interventionist foreign policy that you saw in the Bush Bush administration that you in many ways see in the Obama administration as well. It's not that different. Ron Paul is very much on the outside of it, and if people are concerned about that aspect of conservatism, you know, the trends now, even though this is an economy election, you're right, it's going to hurt him.
And you make a good point about the distinction between Kucinich the peacenik and Paul the isolationist. Bottom line, though, they wind up with the same policy, which is hands off the rest of the world.
True.
All right, Mitt Romney's strategy was interesting last night. Now that Gingrich's lead in the polls has been cut down to size a bit, Romney pretty much laid off him, but went hard after President Obama, which is usually Gingrich's stock and trade. You know, everybody else promotes themselves and their credentials and yada, yada, and Gingrich is out there saying Obama's a this, Obama's a that. That's one of the reasons he rose. Here is Romney, though, when asked about his history of laying people off as a businessman and in some cases shutting businesses down when he is promising now to create jobs.
In the real world, some things don't make it. And I believe I've learned from my successes and my failures. The president I'll look at and say, Mr. President, how'd you do when you were running General Motors as the president? Took it over. Gee, you closed down factories. You closed down dealerships. And he'll say, well, I did that to save the business. Same thing with us, Mr. President. We did our very best to make those businesses succeed. I'm pleased that they did. And I've learned the lessons of how the economy works. This president doesn't know how the economy works. I believe to create jobs, it helps to have created jobs.
So, Anna, he turned the question about him around on Obama.
I thought this was really interesting. I mean, just talking about the president, how he ran GM as if when he was running it, and talking about how he closed dealerships, and that was part of the turnaround, he's in part arguing, and then he closes that clip by saying, I know how to create jobs. The president doesn't know how to create jobs, but he just said, we did the same thing. We were trying to save companies.
And here is Romney doing it again on foreign policy.
This is a president who fundamentally believes that this next century is the post-American century. Perhaps it's going to be the Chinese century. He's wrong. It has to be the American century. America has to lead the free world.
So Romney from the debate. And Todd, I think the strategy there was he had to go negative on Gingrich earlier in the week to stop his surge. But negative campaigning actually does turn people off to both parties, the attacker as well as the attacked in most cases. So he wanted to stop. The question is, as always, how many Iowans or New Hampshireites will find him authentic enough now that he's turning it on Obama?
Always the question for Mitt Romney. I think he was doing a couple of things there. Being presidential by avoiding direct attacks on the guy standing just to his side, that makes you appear more presidential. Conservative Republicans want somebody who can go after Obama and go after him hard. This is a big part of the reason behind Newt Gingrich's rise, because people like how directly he can confront the president. They think he'll be great in a debate against Obama. He'll put him in his place. Well, Mitt Romney's showing a little bit of that ability too, perhaps. But, you know, negative campaigning, Brian, you're right, it can turn people off, but it doesn't mean it's going to stop. I mean, why should Romney campaign negatively in a debate when he's standing next to Newt Gingrich, when he can still have surrogates do it, when he can still have ads on TV doing it, when, hey, he's got some people at the ends of the debate stage. Michelle Bachmann can go after Newt Gingrich and do it for him. Why should Romney get his hands dirty being negative when he can be presidential, show conservatives that he can go after the president, ignore the competition, and let other people do his dirty work?
And which is a perfect setup to our next clip, because Michelle Bachmann did keep up her assault on Gingrich, and here she goes after him, and you make an interesting point that, you know, she did it, Romney didn't have to do it as much. Bachmann goes after Gingrich on who's more committed to fighting abortion rights.
Speaker Gingrich said that he would actively support and campaign for Republicans who got behind the barbaric practice of partial birth abortion. This is not a small issue. This is a big issue. And I think George Will was right when he asked that question. What virtue is there in tolerating infanticide?
We're way over time, so I'm just going to ask you for 30 seconds, sir, to respond on that specific issue.
What I said on that particular issue is I wouldn't go out and try to purge Republicans. Now, I don't see how you're going to govern the country if you're going to run around and decide who you're going to purge. The fact is, twice when I was Speaker, we moved the end of partial birth abortion. Clinton vetoed it. We worked very hard, and Rick Santorum has been a leader on this issue. I have consistently opposed partial birth abortion. I, in fact, would like to see us go much further than that and eliminate abortions as a choice. And I've said, as president, I would defund Planned Parenthood and shift the money to pay for adoption services to give young women a choice of life rather than death.
Thank you, Speaker.
Gingrich and Bachman and Chris Wallace trying to manage the clock from last night's Iowa debate. We're breaking it down with Anna Sale, reporter for our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, and Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent for The Takeaway. And Anna, certainly no shrinking violet is Michelle Bachman, and not afraid to take that risk that going negative will bring down her poll numbers. But, of course, she's in a different position strategically than Romney.
Right. And you heard her say it at another point. She said, I am a serious candidate for president. So she was really stealing a lot of the spotlight in the debate last night because she was the one lobbing these attacks. So then there were rebuttals and rebuttals to that. So she was, I think, got as much camera time as maybe Romney or Gingrich.
Saturday night, too, by the way. I don't know how many people saw that compared to last night, but I watched the Saturday night debate. And, you know, from a true red conservative believer and somebody who's looking for a candidate who is very strong, very articulate, very clear, Bachman won that debate Saturday as much as anybody.
Well, and I think what's interesting is when that exchange on abortion between Bachman and Gingrich, it's about partial birth abortion, and then you got Mitt Romney on the stage, who at one point was a proponent of abortion rights and was asked about that, not by other candidates, but by the moderator. So again, you really see the dynamic last night was the other candidates besides Romney still see it as they're just racing to get that second slot. And Romney, most of his kind of most tough questioning came from the moderators.
Though I wonder, Todd, if it isn't a very small slice of the Republican electorate, even in Iowa where the Republican primary voters tend toward the conservative Christian, you know, people who are such abortion issue voters that they'll choose her over Gingrich for that sliver of a difference between her 100% right to life rating and his 98.5, because he was willing to support other Republicans sometimes who weren't totally pure on the issue.
Yes, but I think for many people, perhaps that may wedge them away from Gingrich if they were thinking about him. But I think it goes more to impression of a candidate. This is not the only issue upon which Newt Gingrich has problems with his conservative street cred, you know, or farm cred in the case of Iowa. There are lots of other issues where people accuse him of being a conciliator, being sort of a lily-livered conservative, making deals and not being dyed in the wool. So yes, abortion, but it goes to the larger narrative about Gingrich that Michelle Bachman is really hitting on. Hey, I'm the pure conservative. I'm the serious candidate. I'm the conservative woman Republican from Minnesota. She hit that note pretty hard. She is going after Gingrich on that, and the strength to which she went after Newt Gingrich Saturday and also last night while Romney stands there and doesn't have to get his hands dirty makes you wonder, what is she up to? She's fighting hard. She supports her candidacy. We know that. She's probably not going to win the nomination. Chances of being president, you wouldn't bet on her right now. Is she running for vice president? Is she doing a big favor for Mitt Romney by being his attack dog? Is she showing conservatives that she can shore up Romney's right because he's going to be weak with dyed-in-the-wool conservatives if he gets the nomination? So you think about her broader strategy. She may be marketing herself as a very viable vice presidential choice.
That is really an interesting conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And
that's
Anna,
all it is.
You know what it brings up for me? I don't think it's implausible, but it brings up the comparison that I'm sure will come to a lot of people's minds between Michelle Bachman and Sarah Palin. But I think that we've seen over these last few months how they are certainly not clones of each other. When she first got into the race, Bachman, a lot of people around the country who didn't know her probably thought, wait, who is she? Why isn't Sarah Palin filling this exact role? Bachman, I think, is actually incredibly much more informed and more detail-oriented on the issues, and it comes across very, very strong in some ways that in which, you know, Sarah Palin came across weak as a vice presidential candidate.
I think, actually, Michelle Bachman has admittedly had her moments of completely misrepresenting the truth. However, when she talks, it's
right,
very forceful.
But that's a different issue.
It's a different issue, and she's extremely articulate, and I think that she seems even more articulate because of these comparisons to Sarah Palin.
She would be vulnerable on how extreme she's been about some things, as well as fast and loose with the truth.
And Brian, also remember, Michelle Bachmann is a member of Congress. She's engaged in the debate in Washington.
Right.
She's a member of the Intel Committee. So when she speaks about national security, you know, quite apart from whether people agree with her opinions, she is informed
Exactly. Because
she's in the room for classified briefings. She should know about this stuff. And she's got details on government, on votes, on strategy, and on national security that Sarah Palin can only read about.
Exactly. It was such an issue as to whether Palin was qualified to be president if something were to happen to McCain. People are not going to ask that question in that way about Michelle Bachmann if she's on a Romney-Bachmann ticket, if it comes to that. But one more Gingrich clip before we're out of time. Again, on the defensive, in a relatively long stretch in the debate last night, I think this lasted about 5 minutes, which is long in televised debate time, over his working for and representing the mortgage company Freddie Mac. Here is 45 seconds worth.
I was a private citizen, engaged in a business like any other business. Now, if you read the whole thing that they posted, I said they need more regulations. And I want to go back to my point about helping people buy houses. I worked for years with Habitat for Humanity. I think it's a good conservative principle to try to find ways to help families that are right at the margin learn how to budget, learn how to take care of a house, learn how to buy a house. And I'm not going to step back from the idea that, in fact, we should have as a goal helping as many Americans as possible be capable of buying homes. And when you look, for example, electric membership co-ops and you look at credit unions, there are a lot of government-sponsored enterprises that are awfully important and do an awfully good job.
So the question, Todd Zwillich, for Gingrich, I guess, is how many people will overlook Gingrich, the inside operator, who's impure on some conservative villains, and decide that his visceral disdain for Democrats and liberals and his looking like an idea machine and an action guy make him their choice to best Obama?
This is the equation for Newt Gingrich and other candidates harping on his business dealings, his $1.6 million in income from Fannie and Freddie, really messes with his brand in this case. There are two sides of Newt Gingrich. Those of us who work in Washington interacted with him for years after he was speaker at his think tank, where he would have us in for interviews, and then he would do speeches at 50 grand a pop and then go to work for Fannie and Freddie. And there's nothing wrong with that, but then when the narrative of the election is that Washington is broken and we don't need people who are inside Washington wheeling and dealing, that's a problem for Newt Gingrich. Do most Americans know exactly what Fannie and Freddie did wrong, what the root of the housing crisis was, why it might be bad for Newt Gingrich to have consulted with them after criticizing him? They may or may not. They do know that Fannie and Freddie is a dirty word. They don't like it. It doesn't feel right. He took their money. That's dirty money. He's not, he's not pure on this issue. How much does that lard him down in relation to all those great attributes that he has—a fine debater, a sort of a philosophical conservative, a great anti-Obama rhetorician. We'll see. He's got a fight against that, but it took up much more time in that debate last night than Newt Gingrich would have liked.
All right, we're out of time. Anna, you're going back to Iowa, right?
I'm going to Iowa for the caucus. I'll be there. Yep.
You'll be there twice, I think, right? You're going there?
Yes. We're
Christmas week,
yes,
and then again?
We're planning. We're nailing all that down.
All right. So get to know this name if you don't already know it, folks. Anna Sale. She's going to be on the show a lot between now and January 4th. And what happens between now and then? Because this was the last debate. Last word.
There will be a lot of retail politicking and a lot of negative ads on TV.
Anna Sale, or reporter for our politics website, It's Free Country. Todd Zwillich, Washington correspondent for The Takeaway. Thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, your favorite actors versus your favorite social media sites in the Online Piracy Act debate. Stay tuned.